fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
Now it's working. All right. So this is part. It's working. This
yay!
Is, yay! It's Part-Time Fanboy with Christian Horn and Paul Edwards, and we are here to talk about the cinematic genius that is. Well, I don't know. Have you seen The Master yet?
I have not seen The Master yet. I want to see The Master.
Oh my God!
But, did you see the 70mm print?
I don't know. I went to the Cinerama. I mean
the ArcLight
in Sherman Oaks. Yeah, and it was beautiful, but I don't think it was the 70mm. I mean, I think you could tell, and I don't think it was the 70mm. But goddamn, that I loved it. There were a couple of walkouts.
Really?
I want to talk about it more after you see it, and maybe Ian sees it, and everyone else sees it. But
okay.
Holy shit, man! I mean, it's a roller coaster, and it's like unrelenting. And I had a friend of mine at work who's a big Paul Thomas Anderson fan, the director, and he's been how I wanted to see the Avengers. He's been dying to see this movie, like just dying. And he saw the 70mm print, and he told me he loves it. But when he was in the theater, I think he saw a couple of walkouts too. And
awesome.
And to me, that's just like, okay, I'm in. I saw maybe one or two walkouts, and I know that when I got out, there were a bunch of old people standing in the lobby, like, what was that about? Can you explain it to me? And one guy was really funny because he was talking to the, the people in the lobby that work there, and he's like, you guys have seen this movie, right? Like, you work here, you've seen it like 5 times, right? And the kids were just like, no, sir, we haven't seen the movie. And he's like, what? You haven't seen it? I need somebody to explain it to me. And I don't think it really needs explanation, but wow. I mean, if Philip Seymour Hoffman does not win an Oscar for this, or just every award there is, it's just, it's just, yeah. And Joaquin Phoenix, too. I mean, I just, oh, God. Like, I don't think Amy liked it as much as I did, to tell you the honest truth. But I loved it. I think it's, I almost want to say it's a masterpiece. I just loved it.
I'm looking forward to it, because any movie that can cause confusion,
yeah,
I'm in favor of. Like, Barton Fink is one of my favorites, and that's definitely one of those, like, whoa, what did I just watch movies?
Yeah, yeah. And I really do think that this is, I saw Barton Fink, I rented that on VHS a very, very long time ago, and I think, and I wasn't crazy about it, and I have not revisited it since then, but I need to go back and look at it, because as I get older, I'm just starting to realize that there are movies that you need to see in a theater, to have that theatrical experience. And I think The Master, where you're not getting up, I got to go to the bathroom, I got to go, there are movies that just demand your whole focus, and The Master is one of those, where it's like, you need to be in that theater, and this is it. This is all that you're giving your attention to, Because, and I think that first happened to me when I saw Lawrence of Arabia on VHS. I was like, what's the big deal? Why does everyone? And then I had a chance to see it in the theater in Pasadena. When I lived in Pasadena, there was an old revival theater there for a long time, and and it just blew my mind when I saw it in the theater. So I don't know, if there's people out there and they want a different movie going experience, The Master is it, man. Like, I don't know that I would sit through it again, but I loved it. I mean, and technically, it's the cinematographer. I can't even pronounce the guy's name. I have it here on my computer screen. It's like Mahai Mullamira Jr. I totally massacred that, but the cinematography is unbelievable. believable. I mean, yeah. It is beautiful. I just, that hit me. That hit me. And it's really funny because I've seen two movies this weekend, and we were going to start talking about Dread, you know, mm-hmm. and The Master is just, I mean, it's just totally sucked me in. So, yeah. But did you get a chance to see Dread? Did you see Dread?
I did. I saw it yesterday afternoon.
And what did you think of Dread?
Well, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was one of the better, you know, sort of comic book adaptations in a while. You know, it's sort of not from the big two, you know, but yeah. As far as, you know, adapting a book from, you know, sort of a lesser known source material, you know, it was really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, well, starting, first of all, did you see it in 3D or 2D?
I saw it in 3D. Did you
I
see
did
it?
Too.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I did. I get some certain movies, you know, sort of get the 3D treatment right. And I think that for the most part in this one, they did, you know, a very good job of getting it right.
Yeah.
Again, the cinematography, fantastic. You know, Anthony Todd Dodd Mantle, who was the DP of, you know, 28 Days Later. He does a lot of Danny Boyle's movie. Was the guy who shot this one.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, just a fantastic use of the slow-mo, you know.
Uh-huh.
And the sort of super saturation. And, you know, this was not a giant budget movie.
No.
By any means, but they certainly, I think, made the most of, you know, the budget that they did have.
That's interesting that it's Danny Boyle's cinematographer. That's what I really liked the most out of the movie. I loved the look of it. I just really loved the sort of apocalyptic. They really did a good job with that, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so too. It's also the writer of 28 Days Later too.
Oh, really?
There were a lot of 28 Days Later connections.
Oh yeah, it's Alex Garland. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, you know. Again, yeah, it's the they shot on location in South Africa, which I guess is the sort of go-to destination for apocalyptic futures these days.
Yeah.
It really did feel, you know, it felt like sort of the Dread universe, you know.
Yeah.
Not exactly like the comic book, but enough to give you that feeling of, you know, humanity just sort of scrambling around, not completely hopeless, but pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing that I mean, you know me, I really like a good apocalyptic movie. I don't know why. I've been fascinated with that stuff since I was a kid. You know, we grew up in the 80s and we were always, you know, the whole Reagan, like the Soviets are going to nuke us and the day after and all that stuff. So I've always been really into apocalyptic end of the world, you know, zombie whatever movies. I don't know why, but I just have. And I just, from the opening scene when they talk about Mega City 1, I was very much into it, you know. I just, the whole desaturated look of it, it looks like, I don't want to say it looks low budget, but the look of it reminded me of the crap, what is the bug movie, where the alien, the bugs come down and the alien.
District 9.
It very much reminded me of that sort of feel.
Right.
And I really liked it. It's they took what small budget they had, which I think it was around maybe 50 million or a little less than that, and they stretched it a long way. I thought just seeing Mega City 1 and one of the people I saw it with, a friend from work, he was like, I wanted to see more of the city, and I was like, me too, you know.
Right.
But I guess that's sort of the thing, because I picked up a Judge Dredd collection at Comic-Con, and I actually started reading it in recent weeks, and that's the whole concept, where each block is like a giant building. You know, there's like these giant buildings, so a city is not necessarily like a city, like as we know it, the city is a series of giant blocks, you know.
Right.
And
right.
And in their whole lives, a citizen might never leave their whole block. They might just stay and live in that block, and they have sort of almost everything you need, but there's overcrowding and poverty and, you know, the everything's just struggling to get by.
I think it's a great concept because it takes basically, you know, British slum culture and drops it in the middle of America.
Yeah.
Important to note that, you know, Judge Dredd started as a 2000 AD series, which, for people who don't know, was a British comic that was a sort of a serial anthology comic, and it's still running, correct?
Yeah, as far as I know, I think 2000 AD is still around.
And it's been running since 1977, I think.
Yeah, Dredd has been around. Yeah, it's second issue, 1977. Yeah.
And, you know, and so pretty much this comic book has been running nonstop since 77.
Yeah.
And, you know, it started off as sort of a satire on, I guess, American culture in a way.
Uh-huh.
You know, the American action hero, you know, who was, sort of going all the way back to the cowboys, you know, who's just completely uncompromising and,
yeah.
you know, just will win at all cost. And, you know, it's interesting that it's sort of starting off as, like, in a way, almost a parody of it, that, you know, he sort of becomes the becomes that sort of idea incarnate. In a way, it's like they sort of did the American action hero better than the Americans did.
Yeah.
At the time.
Well, we should say Judge Dredd, created by John Wagner, and says here Carlos Esquerra, mm-hmm. Back in 1977, 2000 AD, just like you said. But it's interesting to me because it's very much when the books that I've been reading, and it's the Judge Dredd Case Files, Volume 3. It's interesting because he has his own code. Like, he won't step out of that code. But anything that, any leeway or any way he can, anything he can do to achieve the tenets of that code, he will fucking do. You know what I mean? Like, he's not, it's Dirty Harry. Like, Dirty Harry, that's basically, I think, what it must have been a reaction to around mm-hmm. the time. And, mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because that sort of, if you look a little bit of the political history of England, that's sort of like when conservatism was becoming big. Thatcher gets elected in 1979, and it just seems like a sort of satire, a reaction to all that really, you know, over the top, you know, right wing sort of you know, we've got to crack down on drugs and drug lords and all that. A very big, over-the-top reaction to it. And what strikes me about the book is that there's so much humor in it. I mean, it really is satire. I mean, I think a lot of people think Judge Dredd is just like this diehard, like, Punisher sort of thing. But and to a certain extent, he is. But there's so much stuff in there that you would never see in sort of like a Punisher style book, except for Garth Ennis, when Garth Ennis came along and did his Punisher, you know, which now I'm seeing is very much kind of a ripoff of Judge Dredd in a way, you know, now that I'm going back and looking at those books, because, you know, I mean, it's funny, in this book they have sort of a semi-serious chapter where he's got to go stop some, you know, somebody who's bribing officials because he's getting secrets from their cryogenically frozen relatives. And then mm-hmm. they'll have chapters where it's Wally, his robot servant, telling stories about Judge Dredd, and he talks like this. You know, he's got the Elmer Fudd sort of accent, and there's like a humorous take on it where it's like, Judge Dredd, I bought you your lunch, you know, and Judge, you know, while he's trying to stop a criminal, and remember, you have to, eat your lunch every day to maintain your strength. And Judge Dredd is like, I'm trying to stop these criminals. What are you doing? And it's just bizarre. It is right. Absolutely strange and bizarre, but there's something about it. When I first started reading it, I was like, oh boy. But as I kept reading them, I actually started really enjoying them, you know? And because it's just much more than, like you said, much more than just the uncompromising hero. There's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, you know, to it. So I was very surprised that I liked the books as much as I did, and the artwork is just astounding. I mean, yeah. the volume that I have has, I mean, it has Brian Bolland in it, which obviously, what can you say about Brian Bolland? I mean, he's amazing. But it has a bunch of other artists who are obviously different styles from Brian Bolland, maybe a little more cartoony, but the detail is just so amazing in all those stories. So I would recommend picking those up.
One of the interesting things about the Dredd character in the books, too, is that he ages in real time.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah, so the Dredd that's going around today is the same one from, 1977, but now he's in his early 70s, and they have some sort of treatment that, helps them to retain their strength and allows them there are some little sci-fi explanations as to why he's, not dead yet, but he is aging, and that's actually making that a little bit part of the part of the character itself, is that in order to survive, he can't rely on his strength as much as he did before. He just has to rely on his ruthlessness and his code, and I think it's an interesting choice, that they've actually had the character get older and in a sense change, even how we've always talked about how how like cartoon or comic book characters are sort of, they treat change as sort of an anathema.
Yeah.
And Dredd is, in his own way, even though he's sort of inflexible and unchanging, he does change quite a bit. It's just that it's a really slow change. It's like a glacier almost,
Yeah.
And he has to be the way he is because of his environment. He's the ultimate sort of product of his environment character, because the whole, Mega City One and Scorched Earth, he really is in many ways the only thing that stands between, humanity living on and complete and total chaos.
It's really...
Which I thought the movie did a great job of capturing, because one of the things I noticed about this movie is how many kids there were in the movie.
Yeah.
As characters, this is, humanity trying to keep going after a horrible nuclear war. Humanity is definitely, pushing forward, but at the same time, the worst part of humanity has been preserved too, and they have no problem with wiping out entire buildings full of innocent people.
Well, that's what's really interesting to me too. I mean, there's one sequence where in the beginning of the movie he's on a motorcycle and he's chasing some criminals, which I really liked. I was like, wow, this is kind of well done. I really liked the way the punks looked, it's very much kind of a bit of a return to Mad Max for me in a way. The original Mad Max, where these guys are scumbags, they're junkies, or they're just gonna fuck you up, they don't care, and they run over a civilian. And Judge Dredd says, he talks to his dispatch and he's like, an innocent has been hurt attempting to engage. Like, up until then, he's just pursuing them. But once an innocent is hurt, he's like, screw it, it's on. Like, I'm taking the men. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just thought it was really... I thought that was kind of a really nice little touch, like, that shows you, a little bit about the character. I mean, there was definitely a part of me was like, well, why didn't you do this before? You could have stopped maybe an innocent from getting hurt if you'd have, you know, but I kind of like let that go. I was just like, okay, this is, but I really appreciated the look of the film. I really liked Judge Anderson, the woman who played Judge Anderson. I really liked her a lot. I think her name is Olivia Thirlby.
Right.
I think that's how you pronounce it. I thought she did a really good job, and her character was, you know, I mean, let's go into the plot of a little bit. It's Judge Dredd it's basically like Training Day. Judge Dredd has to basically train a new recruit who happens to be a mutant and has psychic powers, right? And as they go on their first assignment, you know, Judge Dredd is kind of showing her the ropes, and you know, they go and investigate a case, and what ends up happening is they get locked down into this city block where a major criminal basically runs the show. And it's very much, I guess, you know, we can say like The Raid, which everyone knows, which is, you know, their thing is you're locked down, all the criminals are gunning for you, and you've got to get out alive, you know.
Right.
And this is her first day. And I think that they did a very good job of balancing her. She's the counterbalance to Judge Dredd's, like, you know, I'm Judge Dredd, you know. She's very much adds the sensitivity to the whole thing. And she's very much sort of the everyman to the people out in the audience who are like, okay, I'm kind of ready for this, but not really. You know what I'm saying?
Right. That's a good summation of, you know, I think that totally nails the plot. It's, you know, the rookie's first day on the job with the most intense, hard-ass trainer ever.
Yeah.
And possibly the worst first day on the job, you know, that a rookie could have.
Yeah.
Where it's a little different from The Raid is that in The Raid, I think what you've got more is an intense, you know, hand-on-hand fighting.
Absolutely.
Style. It's whereas this is, you know, straight up, you know, guns blowing things up, you know, bodies getting burned and people, you know,
yeah.
I lost track of how many people I think fell off of the rails.
Yeah, yeah.
And hit the cement. Dredd is, you know, there to train her, and you know, she's there to, you know, to learn, not just to learn, but to even, you know, it sort of becomes once it starts to become a matter of survival, she's there to do her job, but still hold on to, you know, her humanity.
Yeah.
One of the best, I thought, depictions of what a psychic power could look like,
mm-hmm.
in the movies that I've seen.
Yeah.
The scene where she interrogates their prisoner.
Yeah.
Was a really, really clever little bit of work.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously her talent is something that becomes, you know, a major sort of part of the you know, part of the plot, because, you know, in the beginning they show, well, you know, she barely She would not have passed the training to become a judge. The only reason they're making an exception is because of her powers. And Judge Dredd obviously isn't big on making exceptions.
Yeah.
In any case. And, I mean, if anything, sort of that's like his character arc over the course of the movie is learning to sort of make exceptions for the benefit of the people that he serves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they as narrow an arc as it is for Judge Dredd, you know, he does go through an arc, and that's the other thing is Carl Urban. I mean, he does not take the helmet off at any time. Maybe there's one scene in the very beginning where he's suiting up, but you see,
yes,
like a silhouette.
You really see the sort of the back of his head. It's,
yeah.
And really, for the most part, the only part of him that you see is his mouth, chin, and, you know, maybe the lower part of his nose. I mean, it's a really great acting bit, because everything that comes across comes just from that small part of his face, mm-hmm. his body language,
mm-hmm.
and his timing. I mean, his comic timing in this was really, really
strong. Yeah.
There aren't very many times where he's called on to be funny.
Yeah.
But when he does, it's just perfect timing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I was very impressed with him. I mean, obviously impressed with him from Star Trek. And now I've got to track down a couple other movies that he's done, which some people say are really good and other people don't. But I think this guy's a really, really, really great actor, because just the thing is you, a lot of people think it's really easy to play a one-dimensional type and do it well. And it's not. It's very hard to do that. And it's very hard to be sort of in that skin and be the hard ass, but in a way have some sort of sympathetic vibe, which Judge Dredd doesn't really have, but you do identify with him to a certain point, especially when you see the world that surrounds him. You're like, this world is shit, you know, and he's got to deal with it every day. So, you know, he's a hard ass, and especially when he's dealing with her in the beginning, he's very, you know, hard edged, and he's like, it's your show, you know, like, but then as it goes on, you can see him sort of soften up towards her and kind of in a way become a bit impressed with not necessarily her physical ability, but what she can do with her mental ability, you know.
Right.
And yeah, he was really good, and I loved her. I was just like, she was great. There was just something about her that I just, you know, tapped into her character right away, mm-hmm. and just really loved.
And one of the great things I thought, like, going back to just the script and the way the screenwriter keeps them, like, under the gun all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just sort of not a moment in this movie where they ever, like, have the upper hand in anything, you know, pretty much until the end.
Yeah.
I thought they did a great job of taking a very intimidating character, you know, and managing to make him the underdog throughout. And part of that, too, was Lena Headey's performance as Mama. Which, at first, I was just wondering sort of, wow, what's going on with this character, because she sort of seems sort of out of it, and she sort of mumbles things through. But then you start to, when you get sort of her backstory and you see, like, sort of what she's capable of doing, it's actually a really, really good villain.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think the way that they... It's interesting because the character of Judge Dredd, they did a really good job of, and now that you're talking about it, it kind of clicks in my head, is you never get, like, in Batman movies or Superman movies, you never get the sort of feeling like this is one man, you know? Like, you always get the feeling like, oh, this is Batman, and he's going to kick ass, and, you know, the legend is so large. And in Judge Dredd, I think, you know, they're in such a huge building. I mean, this is like a giant, mega skyscraper sort of thing. There were a lot of shots, especially in the beginning, like in the courtyard, where they were angled up, and Judge Dredd, you know, would be angle up on Judge Dredd, where you got the feeling of, in the big scope of things, he's not really that big a dude, you know. He's you know, where he would be surrounded by crowds, or, you know, he's in the hallway, like, you get the idea that he's a badass, but he is only one man, you know. It's right. One man standing against the mob, and that to me was a really good directorial choice, and I guess cinematography choice, where there would be a lot of shots where it's like, yeah, this guy's a badass, but what can one badass do if the whole world is against you and you're surrounded? You know what I mean? And that was what really impressed me. Like you said, I definitely got the feeling, and you don't get that feeling a lot in superhero movies where you finally realize, like, wow, this is just one guy and he's on his own. You know what I mean?
Right. Which is definitely sort of what reminded me of those Mad Max movies, of, you know, the 80s. As a matter of fact, the whole movie to me really did feel like an 80s movie.
And, yeah, you know, yeah.
Since that's when Judge Dredd the comic sort of had its big heyday,
yeah,
you know, I thought was pretty pretty fitting.
Well, I mean, I think the big thing too is that they made an uncompromising Judge Dredd picture. It's not like sort of like you went to go see the Punisher movies and it's like, yeah, well, you know, maybe. You know what I'm saying? Like, this could be the Punisher if you kind of squinted really hard and let stuff go. Like, this was Judge Dredd all the way, you know, and they went with the hard R, and you know, and they were not going to apologize for everything they did. I mean, you know, there's a lot of gore in it. There's definitely a lot of violence and a lot of gunplay. And it was, you know, it was what this type of movie should be. Is it going to make a lot of money? I don't know. But I don't know about you, but when it comes out on Blu-ray, I'm going to buy it just because I love the cinematography. I was just, and I love the desaturated, sort of like, not desaturated, but almost like a hyper-saturated look to it in certain ways. There was a lot of greens and yellows in there and red. Like, it looks very, the production designer did such a great job of making it look really run down, and even more so than like a slum that you would see, you know, in New York or, you know, Michigan or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, he did such a great job of it looking like this world is falling apart, but it's struggling so hard to maintain whatever crazy sanity it had. I mean, and what, you know what else it reminded me of, which is really ironic in a way, especially reading the comic books, RoboCop. I mean, it's RoboCop. Yeah. I mean, it really is. There's a lot of RoboCop in there. And I have to say, reading those books from, like, I guess the collection that I'm reading from is maybe 79-80. Mm-hmm. Whoever wrote RoboCop had to have read Judge Dredd comics, because it's the exact same thing almost. It's a cop who's uncompromising, and there's a lot of ridiculous satire, you know, humor, commentary in there, you know, and you know, reading these Judge Dredd books, I'm like, wow, this is RoboCop, but this came before RoboCop, you know, so
2000 AD was just like an amazingly influential magazine on so many people, and you know, so many great writers came from there. And you know, I'm sort of not surprised that, you know, that it didn't influence, you know, even more. You know, I think even again, what like sitting in that movie, you know, it did. It reminded me of the 80s and that sort of like that mentality that we had at the time, that like literally, you know, that everything could fall apart at a moment's notice.
Yeah,
you know, which is, you know, sort of back in vogue again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, it definitely took me back to a different style of filmmaking, which is really funny because, like I said, the budget is so much smaller than any big budget that you're getting today. And it shows that you can really, like with District 9 and this sort of thing, you can really pull back the budget and still make something very, very impressive. I mean, I'm not going to say this movie is for everybody, but I would say that if you miss like sort of like the Lethal Weapons, if you miss Dirty Harry, if you miss movies like that, but this one has a little bit more heart than those. I mean, maybe not Lethal Weapon, but definitely like the Dirty Harry movies or Death Wish or that sort of thing. This movie's for you, and it does everything right that I think the Punisher movies have done wrong, you know. And it's very interesting to me because it, in a way, there's the way it's shot reminds me a little bit of Old Boy or Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, where or even Chaser, where it's, you know, these hardcore vengeance movies, you know, that just, you know, kick all kinds of ass. I'm not going to say that it's on the quality of those, because for me, Old Boy, Lady Vengeance, Chaser, like those are on a whole other level, you know what I'm saying? But this was a very solid, you know, straightforward action movie, and it had good performances. Like you said, like the villain, I think she did a really good job. At first, you know, there's always a thing with me where I very much, you know, in movies where there's a big bad guy, like, why are these guys, like, following this person? You know, I don't, get it. You know, like, why don't they just turn on her and shoot her head off if she's such a... But then as the movie goes on, you're like, yeah, you don't want to fuck with her. Right. You know, you don't want to mess with this person. So, I really liked it. But I'm very curious to see it in 2D. You know, I almost want to go back. See, this is what I hate about 3D. There's a lot of times where I go and see a 3D movie, and if I find myself with maybe a little extra time or something, I'll go back and see it in 2D, because I found myself kind of taking the glasses off in the scenes. Because, like, let's be honest, except for the slow-mo, it's not really needed, right? I mean, do you really think that the 3D is that compelling?
I don't know, because I think I feel like it gave a lot of depth to the building. I mean, I feel like the character of the building came through so much in the 3D.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, maybe you're right about that, but then that to me is kind of bothersome, because I'm not going to buy a 3D TV. I don't have a 3D TV right now.
No, but again, the nice thing that you can rely on with Anthony Dodd-Mantle is that even if you're watching a 2D version, his sense of composition is so good that it's going to look good even in 2D.
Well, that's why I kept taking my glasses off, because I was like, I want to... Because the thing is, with 3D, you get that sort of... It darkens everything, and I kept taking my glasses off because I kept thinking, like, I want to see, like, everything. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like my vision was a little bit obscured and everything was darkened, and I felt like that the composition of everything and the colors and the way everything was laid out was so well done that I was like, I want to see it, you know? And I think where the 3D really comes through is, you know, the thing that we forgot to say is that there's a big drug out on the streets called slow-mo, you know, and it basically makes you feel like everything is moving super slow. And there are sequences where you get the POV of the drug addict or whatever. And, you know, the 3D really just shines in that. And I have not seen a movie that does gore in 3D, and this movie did really good. Like, there's a scene where the guy gets shot in the face and the bullet's coming through and it comes out the other end. You know what I mean? It's just
right.
Oh, you know. So I mean, it's a movie that I would not say, like, don't see it in 3D, but I'm really eager to maybe go see a matinee and see it in 2D. I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
I would give it a shot in 2D, but again, I'll also see it when it comes on home video or home, whatever they're calling it these days.
Yeah, whatever it's gonna be. Yeah, I gotta say, and to me, it's just really interesting how much it mirrors RoboCop to me. How much RoboCop? It's just funny. The comic obviously must have influenced RoboCop, and now this, because I mean, even that, there's a sequence where they're cornered by the drug dealers, and he throws out the stun grenade, and he's like, "You have 20 seconds to comply." You have 10 seconds. That's Ed 209.
Right.
You know, Ed 209, you have 10 seconds to comply. You know, I mean, that's just brilliant. I mean, but let's talk about The Raid, because I saw The Raid on DVD a couple of weeks ago. I finally got a chance to see it. And I mean, I know that there's a lot of people like, oh, this is The Raid. And I would have to say, well, the rumors that I read online are that this Dread script has been floating around for years. Yeah. So that concept, you know,
it's not a new concept either. I mean, it goes back, you know, to the Westerns. I mean, it's really, it's the whole idea is that you've got your heroes in an enclosed space against impossible odds.
Yeah.
Are impossible odds. I mean, it's like Die Hard in a way, whereas the difference with Die Hard is that, you know, he's sealed in and, you know, he's got a limited number. In this case, both in The Raid and in Dread, they're sealed in and it's a giant structure where everyone in the building pretty much is out to get them.
Yeah. I mean, the big difference between The Raid and Dread is, well, I mean, obviously The Raid, I was talking to my friends and they hadn't seen it. I mean, I think The Raid is like 10 plus, like a 10 plus movie. And like for me, Dread, maybe an 8, you know what I mean? But The Raid is impressive because of all the choreography, all the fighting, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
That to me, and it's just, Dread is a different type of movie, you know what I'm saying? But the big difference to me, that I really liked about, like, the raid, they're just trying to get out. They're like, yes, we need to get the fuck out of here. Like, they're coming to get us and they're killing us. And at one point, like, they say they're going to perform a raid on like the 30. How many levels are in this place? Like 100, 200 in Dread? Like,
yeah, they're like 200 levels in Dread.
Yeah, and they go and they conduct a raid on the 30 something level, and then they accomplish their task and they're leaving, and then they get locked in. You know what, right, I'm saying? Their task was not to go in and conquer and take out whatever it was. They came in with a task, and then the big drug dealer, you know, Mama, she basically says, like, no, you're not leaving, we're keeping you here. And then Dredd kind of turns around on his head where he's like, well, fuck it, let's go take the fight to them. You know what, right, I mean? Like, we've got to survive, but we can't. There's even that line of dialogue where he's talking to Judge Anderson, or the recruit Anderson, and he's saying, you know, what are our options? And she's saying, well, we either hide and wait for reinforcements to get here, or we try and survive. Those are the two big ones, or something. And then he's like, well, you forgot about the third one. And I think she says something to the effect of, well, what's that? And he's like, well, we go and we take her out, or something, right, like that. And that to me was like the very big difference in tone, where they were like, you know what, we're just going to go take care of you, you know. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
Yeah. The other thing that's, I sort of different about the two of them is that in the raid, you know, it's a constant fight upward.
Yeah.
Whereas with Dredd, it's like there's a little bit of that, but it's a little more, you know, sort of all over the place too. You know, they sort of jump from level to level, and yeah, the sci-fi aspect of it, you know, it makes it just a completely different beast in a, yeah, lot of ways. What the raid is most amazing at is its style.
Yeah,
because it's very slick, and the hand fighting is just amazing without falling back on, you know, the modern sort of trick of like the shaky cam,
yeah,
or, you know, or like the really rapid fire editing. The editing's tight, but, you know, they don't like edit, they don't cut on every hit, you know. I mean, it's, sure, in a way it's a little more old school style of shooting a fight, because you've got, you know, longer takes with more hits and things, yeah, like that. But now you've got the added bonus of like the moving camera added to that, so, you know, so it makes the fights feel even more intense. Uh-huh. You know, like the style on the raid puts it, you know, just leagues above almost everything else. And it's again a very low budget movie, but a very fresh take on an old idea.
Well, I mean, that's the thing with the raid, and that was the only thing, the only weakness I had about the raid, where there was definitely a point where I was like, well, this is not based in reality in any way. You know what I'm saying? Not that an action movie should be based in, but there was definitely a point where I was like, okay, like, I'm in, like, it's a kung fu, like, whatever, martial arts movie, and I'm going to go with that, and that's what type of movie this is. Whereas Dredd kind of, I mean, it doesn't base it in reality or whatever, but it has a bit more of a flat sort of like tension going through it that, mm-hmm, mounts slowly, whereas the raid is like bam, 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 edge of your seat, bam, 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 you know, keeps you going, holy shit, what was that? Did you see that? Like, that's the raid, and that's what I love about the raid. But what I really like about Dredd too is that it gives you a bit more of a feeling that you're like in the soup, you know what I mean? That you're like in it, and, mm-hmm, and the stuff is going down, and that's it. Because the scene where Mama goes on the intercom in Judge Dredd, mm-hmm, and they're in the courtyard, her and him and Anderson are in the courtyard, and she makes the announcement, like, there are some judges, I want them, kill them. Right. And you're surrounded, like, this is kind of like what I was talking about before, where the camera is kind of pointing up and going in a circle, and you're seeing the people, how many people are in there. That, mm-hmm. to me, was a very, like, oh, shit moment. You know what I mean? That, right. to me, was like, oh, how in the hell are they going to get, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So,
what I thought was a nice counterplay, too, was the period where Dredd actually gets a hold of the intercom and makes his announcement.
yeah, it's great.
Which is something funny, because in the raid, you know, they're too busy surviving. They never get the chance to really take over the building in a way. But, you know, but Dredd in over the course of the movie, you know, he sort of gets control of this building.
Yeah.
And, he very uncompromising. It's like, well, you know what? You know, you may be the person who's in charge, but you're still a criminal and I'm still the law.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where his line is. And, you know, and he's there to remind everyone, you know, where the line is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Carl Urban just, again, sells it. The one thing you can say about, you know, him with this movie is that he just sells this character. You know, you believe the intensity, you believe, like, the uncompromising, and, you know, I think Dirty Harry is a great comparison, because it's definitely that sort of Eastwood-esque, you know, like, no, I'm not going to take. I don't care if, you know, you've got, you know, 100,000 people out to kill me. I'm not going to bend. I'm not going to change.
Yeah,
you know, you're the wrong one.
Yeah, the other thing too is that what's interesting is in the raid that the building mostly is comprised of thugs, and you know what I'm saying. And in this one, because that was sort of like where the writing kind of took a turn in Dredd for me, because in that scene where they're in the courtyard and she makes the announcement, I was like, well, that's it. All those people are just gonna, but they run. You know, the people run. The innocents. The building is full of regular people who are like, I'm not getting involved in this. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's definitely thugs, but there's people who just run into their apartments or their living units and are saying like, I cannot. You know, I've got kids. I'm out of here. You know, whereas in the raid, it was like almost everyone in the building against them. Maybe like one or two families or something like that. You know, but it's interesting because they even had that scene where they break into somebody's room, right?
Yes.
And it's a total, they did two totally different things with it, right?
That's the nice thing is that, you know, I like having two movies that are kind of similar come out, you know, back to back, because you can see the different choices that people make with those.
Yeah.
And especially when they're two movies that take like really great interesting choices with sort of the same setup.
Yeah.
And both of these movies do. They how you said, like, sort of edge of your seat, you know, I really didn't know, you know, throughout both movies which way they were going to take a character.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I was really happy to, you know, I was really happy with the choices that they made throughout both movies.
Yeah, yeah. And I was also really impressed to how good Dredd looked to me. Like, the costume, the outfit. Like, I might have had a little issues with the helmet being a little too big on his head or something, but the costume, I mean, the outfits look great. I mean, they look great. They're so intimidating to me, like the whole leather padded, you know, and it's, I just, I mean, it's Judge Dredd. What can, I hope they make another one. I hope that they do another one. I would go see another one, you know?
Yeah, I would definitely see them do another thing. And again, after the movie, You did want to see more. You wanted to see more of this city. You wanted to see, you know, wanted to see what would happen, you know, more of the scorched earth. You know, you wanted to see, you know, what was beyond those walls. You know, which is really funny where, you know, and now I'm going to go back to the, you know, horrible first Judge Dredd movie.
Yeah.
They went beyond all of that. They showed you so much more of the world in that first movie, but it was never interesting.
Yeah.
Whereas with this one, they just show you a tiny sliver of that world, and you're just like, wow, I would like to see more of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, it's very much where you're sitting there in the beginning of the movie, and I'm intrigued. Show me more, you know. Whereas, you know, I mean, but that's what they did with Judge Dredd in the 90s. It just ended up being one of these big Stallone, you know, action budget pieces, you know, like Demolition Man or something like that, where it's it's just, it's more to serve Stallone and his star power than to serve what's going on in the actual, what the piece of the movie, the film, you know. And that's the thing, is I don't think Carl Urban, like, I didn't get that from this movie, like, this is about Carl Urban. Like, no, this is Judge Dredd, and this is, you know, Judge Anderson. And, like, at no point did I feel that, like, this is my star vehicle, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Because somebody like Carl Urban, who's getting a lot of cred, you know, with the Star Trek movies and doing a lot, he could have easily just been like, no, fuck it, I got to take the helmet off at some point. You know what I mean? And he doesn't. And I hope that he doesn't for the next movie. If he does the next movie, you know, I hope that they just keep that going, because it adds a certain mystery and sort of creepiness to the figure, you know, intimidation factor, you know, this guy is just there, and you're never going to know his person, you know, you're just never going
to
know.
And to me, it honestly makes it him more of a sad character.
Yeah, you're right. I
mean, that's the one thing, you know, when Judge Anderson is reading, you know, reading him in the beginning, and she talks, you know, she's talking with the superior about what she feels, and, you know, she gets the order, she gets everything, and then she stops, you know, when she says that there's something behind it, and she sort of stops.
Yeah.
And you're left to fill in, you know, what that is for yourself. It's like, okay, what's under all of that? And for me, I just felt like, well, this guy's sad, you know?
Yeah.
He's you know, he's got the weight of the world literally on his shoulders. He's the only thing that's standing between, you know, order and complete and utter chaos on a daily basis. Like, all this man does is work.
Yeah.
And you know, there's no thanking for him. There's no, you mean, like, the judges, you know, they're feared. They're maybe respected, but, you know, no one loves them.
Yeah, and that was the feeling that I got too. I mean, especially talking about, like, the lone man standing against the world, like, that was the feeling I got too, where it's like, okay, he's the biggest judge. Like, obviously they kind of say at one point, somebody says, like, oh, you're kind of the best, but they don't make a big deal out of that in the beginning of the movie. There's no fanfare. There's no, like, to me it's like, yeah, so what, you're the biggest ant on the anthill, I could still fucking crush you. You're just an ant. You know what I mean? Like that to me was what really was the most powerful in the movie about it, which is like, yeah, this guy's, I mean, he's the most feared, he's the biggest, but so what? Like, it doesn't really matter, because the world is such a shithole that, you know, you're kind of, I don't know, it's just, that was what was impressive to me, like, taking a character like that that's supposed to be the biggest thing in the world, or the biggest thing in this movie, and kind of, like, marginalizing him a bit.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before, and to me, I just felt like that was really smart. I just was like, yeah, so, yeah, I mean, great, you're great, so what? It doesn't matter. There's like 500 other drug dealers down the street. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Whereas
right.
In the Dirty Harry movies, they don't do that. Or in the Death Wish movies, it's like, you know, or any other kind of, you know, whatever Lethal Weapon, they make it that their character is just so, like, you know, imposing and powerful that he does make a difference. There, he is making a change. You know what I mean? And for me, I really got the feeling in this movie that it was like just another day. Like, all right, tomorrow we're going to deal with some other crazy shit, you know, and we got to get through it. And, you know, and that's the other thing too. In the comic books, those judges, they're trained from the age of 5.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I mean, I have a 5-year-old right now, and I cannot imagine a world where they would take my 5-year-old and be like, guess what? For the rest of your life, this is it. Like, you are going to have to just be a badass and kill people and all that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, that to me was horrifying. You know, when I read that in the comic book, I was just, wow. You know, and obviously not meant to be taken too seriously, but I don't know, man. I liked it a lot, but I liked The Master too. I had a good weekend at the movies. I think it was a very solid. I want to see it in 2D now. Oh man, I don't know, because I just thought it was so well shot. It was so well shot.
And it's been a really good year for movies, actually.
It has. I mean, you know, despite my disappointment with The Dark Knight, like this does everything right to me that The Dark Knight did wrong in a certain way. I was just like, come on. But I just, yeah. I mean, this was definitely, like you said, one of the better. I mean, if not one of the best comic adaptations out there, you know. So, I don't know. I'm hoping for a second one. We'll go see the second one when it comes out, hopefully.
I guess we
got to check the box office on them. Well, all right. Any other thoughts on Judge Dredd or anything else, Paul?
No, other than the fact that, like, if I'm really excited about getting the collected series now.
Yeah.
You know, because when I was growing up, it was really hard to sort of come across a prog, I think is what they call them, of 2000 AD.
Uh-huh.
And so I really like the look of the collections that they put together, and those people at the 2000 AD booth were really nice and very, very knowledgeable about their product. So I'm excited about picking those up now.
Yeah, I got the one that I picked up was Judge Dredd, The Complete Case Files number 3. And I mean, you were there with me when I was at the mm-hmm. booth, and I guess it starts, it introduces sort of Judge Death, which is the thing that when I was a little kid, the only way I found out about Judge Dredd, there used to be this comic magazine called Comic Scene, and they did a whole article on it, and it had this beautiful Brian Bolland art. And I was just blown away by it when I saw it. And I was like, what is this? And like you said, they knew their stuff at the 2000 AD booth, because I explained the exact panel that I saw. And the guy was like, yeah, it's probably in one of these two. And then he flips through and he shows me the book. Yeah. And I was like, that's it. That's the exact panel. Remember? I was like totally freaked out. I was like, I cannot believe it.
Those guys have a incredible knowledge of this magazine that goes back all the way to 1977 and is just packed full of stories. And, you know, that's the incredible thing about Dredd, is that it's just one of the stories out of 2080.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing, is like you said, I think those guys at the 2000 AD booth, if you ever see them at a convention and you're curious about Judge Dredd or whatever, they will hook you up, man, because they hooked me up. And I've been reading this case file. I mean, they're big books, and that's the thing too, they're anthologies. I mean, they're anthologies of Judge Dredd stories. It's not like you can read one story, put it down, go back to it later, pick up another story. I mean, there's definitely arcs and stuff, but you know, at least in my experience of this book, you can pick it up and put it down and get back to it. So anyway, cool. So, well, that's it for this week, I think. This has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Check us out at parttimefanboy.com. And check out Judge Dredd. He is the law.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
Part-time. Part-time fanboy.